My pancreas is always there for me, secreting those enzymes, secreting those hormones too, metabolizing carbohydrates.
Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to Rock Review. Content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about rock and roll music from such sources as The News and Observer, The Week magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. This opening number, My Pancreas, is brought to us by Weird Al Yankovic. We'll be hearing more about and from science rock and roll, our featured genre this week, later on in today's program. But first, these trivia questions.
My pancreas attracts every other pancreas in the universe with a force proportional to the product of their mass.
Our trivia questions come to us today from www.classicbands.com. Question number one, what is the most played rock and roll song? Is it A, Never My Love by The Association, B, Yesterday by The Beatles, C, You've Lost That Loving Feeling by The Righteous Brothers, D, Stand By Me by Benny King, E, Dock of the Bay by Otis Redding? Hint, this song has been played over 8 million times. The other four songs listed above have each been played about 7 million times and are tied for second place. So which one of those five is in first place? The most played rock and roll song, Never My Love, Yesterday You've Lost That Loving Feeling, Stand By Me, or Dock of the Bay? Question number two, which recording artist's real name is Herbert Buckingham Cowry? That's spelled K-H-A-U-R-Y, last name. Hint, here's a sample of this artist singing.
Oh, tiptoe by the garden, by the garden, by the willow tree. Come tiptoe through the tulips with me.
Who is this famous singer? I'll even give you another hint. It's not John Wayne. In the transition section of today's program, it's brought to us by BGORecords.com and entitled Today in Rock History. And today is the weekend of May the 20th. What were the number one hits this weekend? Well, back in 1967, you may remember, it was the Young Rascals with Groovin'. And back 10 years after that, in 1977, this weekend, it was Stevie Wonder with Sir Duke at number one. And back in 1983, it was David Bowie with Let's Dance at number one this weekend. If you were born on May 20th, you share a birthday with Joe Cocker, with a little help from my friends. Born on that day, May 20th, 1944. And also born on May 20th is Cher, born on that day back in 1946. Or if you were born on May 21, you share a B-day with Ronald Isley of the Isley Brothers, born on May 21, 1941, and Leo Sayer, When I Need You, born on May 21, 1948. Miscellany in rock history this weekend, well, back in 1967, it was the BBC banning the Beatles' Day in the Life on the grounds that it might encourage drug-taking. And 40 years ago this weekend, it was the bass player for the band Chicago undergoing 5 hours of emergency surgery after losing 4 teeth at a Cubs baseball game to 4 hoods who had objected to the length of his hair. And back in 1975 this weekend, it was Elton John performing the first of 8 concerts in the USSR, the first Western rock star to play there. 4,000 people attend. And finally, this weekend, back in 1980, members of The Clash are involved in a fight with the Hamburg audience.
You had one eye in the mirror as you watched yourself go about, and all the
girls dream that they'd be a partner. They'd be a partner, and you're so vain.
This next article comes to us from The Week magazine, published on May 13, 2011, entitled A Generation's Favorite Tune, I'm So Vain. This is from the Health and Science section of The Week magazine. Young people love themselves more today than ever before, says University of Kentucky psychologist Nathan DeWall, and the proof is in their music. He and his colleagues analyzed the lyrics of Billboard Hot 100 songs from the past three decades and found a steady increase in self-centeredness and hostility towards others. In the early 80s, lyrics love was easy and positive and about two people, study co-author Gene Twenge tells the New York Times. The recent songs are about what the individual wants and how she or he has been disappointed or wronged. The study found a marked increase in the prevalence of the words I and me in song lyrics and fewer instances of we and us. It also registered a jump in angry lyrics about hating and killing and a drop in songs containing positive words like love or sweet. The researchers suggest that rampant narcissism may be making it harder for people to connect with one another. They point to other surveys that show that more people are apt to feel sad and lonely now than in previous decades. In local rock news, we see this article by Thad Ogburn, News and Observer, published on May 18, 2011. Scotty Watch, Getting a Glimpse of Garner. Not only will hometown celebrity Scotty McCreery be in the spotlight on tonight's two-hour American Idol, Minnie Garner and Triangle residents likely will be looking for a glimpse of themselves, too. Some of the footage taped during Scotty's homecoming Saturday should air on the show. Cameras and crowds of fans were at every stop Scotty made, from the early morning radio station visits to his return to Garner High School, to the big Lake Benson Park parade and bash, then the rainy baseball pitch at NC State. Only the Garner High Prom, where Scotty slipped in the back door, was not taped.
And maybe I didn't treat you quite as good as I should have. If I made you feel second best, girl, I'm sorry I was blind. You were always on my mind.
This is Scotty McCreery singing. He is available on iTunes now. This next article, Scotty's Fans Swell Beyond Garner, is by Brooke Kane, published in the News and Observer on the 14th of May, 2011. Scotty McCreery can credit much of his successful path from Garner to Los Angeles and back again to his smooth baritone voice and his boyish charm. But the American Idol star also owes a big old thank y'all to his extremely dedicated fan base, some of whom are far away from the Triangle. The most hardcore of these Scotty fans call themselves McCreerians, and making Scotty the next idol is a mission they take seriously. Almost as soon as the young singer popped up on Idol, Scotty fans, let's be honest, the vocal majority of them are young girls, began creating Twitter accounts, Facebook pages, Tumblr pages, and blogs to spread the Gospy gospel. And more importantly, to drum up votes, the article skips down. Despite such thrills, Susan says the lure of Twitter interaction with Scotty is secondary. It's mostly about connecting with other Scotty fans. You can interact with other McCreerians and meet people who support Scotty as much as you, she says. And then there's the voting. Susan says she votes more than 500 times each week, using three different devices, her home phone, her iPod, and her computer. Her record is 872 votes in one night, she says. As long as you don't slack off, the votes really add up. Article skips down and ends with this. at Scotty M. Support, also known as 17-year-old Miranda Gilbert from Alabama, diligently reminds her followers each week of the main order of business. Once again, I suggest you stay off of Twitter while voting. It's so distracting and can get you out of the groove of voting. Miranda says she voted more than 1,000 times this week. Everyone for Scotty. Miranda also advises Mercurians not to help the competition. I understand a lot of you like more than one contestant, but I do not suggest split voting. Vote for Scotty only, if possible. It's a wise strategy, and one which has kept Scotty out of the dreaded results basement. You were always on. And what's next? Well, the contestant with the fewest viewer votes will be sent home during Thursday's 8 p.m. show. That will leave the final two to battle for the title of American Idol the following week.
You know I can be found sitting home all alone. If you can't come around, at least please telephone. Don't be cruel to who heart is true.
This next article is brought to us by Stephen Olemacher from Associated Press, published on May the 5th, 2011. Elvis exits as Jacob Isabella topped the baby name list. Ending a run that started in 1955, Elvis did not make the list of 1,000 most popular baby names compiled by the Social Security Administration. The name never topped the charts, peaking at number 312 in 1957 and making a slight comeback after Elvis Presley died in 1977. But the King's first name was in the top 1,000 for 55 straight years, something that cannot be said for, say, Barack, which has never cracked the list. I was all shook up, Social Security Commissioner Michael Astrew said. It's been a tradition tracking his ups and downs. And to see him drop off the top 1,000, I have to be honest, we took that very hard at Social Security. Jacob continued a 12-year run as the most popular name for boys in 2010, according to the list released Thursday. Isabella was the most popular name for girls for a second year at the top.
Oh, baby, it's still you I'm
thinking of.
Don't be cruel. Heart, it's true.
Okay, science rock and roll? Who would have guessed? When a listener recently suggested this as a featured genre of rock and roll music for this program, I was more than a little dubious. Dr. Swab, a local biologist, nevertheless referred me to some articles in a recent edition of Scientific American. And then I Googled the subject and I received a fairly long list of articles pertaining to this topic. Many of the recommended rock songs in these articles were either folk tunes for children or comedy spoofs, such as the one that opened today's program by Weird Al about the pancreas set to a Beach Boys beat. But all of the songs dealt with serious issues of concern, such as environmental issues and the understanding of the principles of biology, chemistry, and even political science. I start this section of today's program, then, with some reviews of science rock albums, and then I'll read the Scientific American articles that Dr. Swab referred to in her recommendation. You may have noticed that I also selected some of the other articles for today's programs based on their relationship to science and music.
Science is real.
This first review of an album comes to us from DIGG.com. It's a compilation CD of science rock songs. This Week in Science is one of the top science podcasts on iTunes. It's a bit like a mix between The Daily Show and Science Friday. Funny, geeky stuff. They just released a CD of listener-submitted science songs on topics from Star Trek actor envy to space missions and world robot domination. website has free tracks for download. This was published on 27th of June, 2006. This next review is an iTunes customer review by Joe Tisi of the 2006 album Momentum, Songs About Science by Jim Taylor and Friends. This album was created to benefit the Health Adventure at Pack Place in Asheville, North Carolina. We are very lucky to have so many talented artists in our community who are committed to positive cultural growth. This album represents the ideals that are the driving force in integrating the arts back into the schools, cooperation, goodwill, and artistic excellence. Though this album is classified as folk, it is essentially a collection of children's songs that encourage the study of science. Other musical styles include jazz, country, and even rap. In short, buy it. And finally, this editorial review by Andrew Bartlett from Amazon.com. Science is maybe the hippest platform for the Schoolhouse Rock crew to build on, as evidenced on this collection. The subjects are quirky, opening with a proto-ragtime boogie-woogie backing for the Body Machine, which shares the traffic flow approach of America Rocks, I'm Just a Bill, to explain how the body mechanically collects nutrition. With songs like Interplanet Janet and A Victim of Gravity, this collection will newly tickle the ears of adults brought up with these tunes as Saturday morning cartoon fare. The lyrics from George Newall, Lynn Ahrens, and singing jazz vet Bob DeRoe are easy company for the sometimes complex notions. Treating the subject of the circulatory system as a dance craze is a great way to tune kids in to an intimidating subject. And as usual with Schoolhouse's other titles, the music and vocals are artfully simple but never disappointing. And the original Scientific American article is Darwin Was a Punk. This is written by David Biello, published on October 1, 2010, in Scientific American. Evolutionary biologist and musician Greg Graffin explains why there are no good songs about science and how evolution can be a guide to life. Greg Graffin, by the way, is the lead singer for Bad Religion. He's also a lecturer in life sciences and paleontology at UCLA. So how are evolution and punk rock related? Well, the idea with both is that you challenge authority, you challenge the dogma. It's a process of collective discovery, it's a debate, it's experimentation, and it's verification of claims that might be false. In your new book, Anarchy, Evolution, Faith, Science, and Bad Religion in a World Without God, you talk about the anarchic exuberance of life. What do you mean by that? The trick is, how do you talk about natural selection without implying the rigidity of law? We use it as almost an active participant, almost like a god. In fact, you could substitute the word God for natural selection in a lot of evolutionary writings, and you'd think you were listening to a theologian. It's a routine we know doesn't exist, but we teach it anyway. Genetic mutation and some active force choose the most favorable one. That simply isn't a complete explanation of what's going on. We need to stop thinking about law-like behaviors and embrace the surprises. So was Darwin a punk? Well, he was very straight-laced because of English Victorian culture, but he sure did like to hobnob with the radicals. There are punk fans who kind of stand in the back and never in their lives go slam dancing, but love the music and what it represents. Darwin may have been that kind of contemplative and pensive anti-authoritarian.
When all soldiers lay their weapons down, or when all kings and queens relinquish their crowns, or when the only true Messiah rescues us from ourselves, it's easy to imagine.
This is Greg Graffin, the lead singer from Bad Religion, doing the song called Sorrow. Are there any good songs about science? No, I don't know of a single one. Most songwriters who have been lucky enough to have their song on the radio or be heard widely don't know anything about science. The best songs have a strong dose of metaphor. Most songs about science don't have that. Like She Blinded Me with Science, it's a stupid song. No offense to Thomas Dolby. Well, how can evolution be a guide to life? When you win the lottery, no one's asking you to justify it. If you have a tragedy, everybody wants to know why. Everybody wants you to justify it. The way you do that, the story or narrative you tell, is your worldview. The fossil record gives me a great deal of comfort in difficult times. It helps me recognize that this current drama going on the planet is one of a series of episodes. Ultimately, life goes on even after a catastrophe. That gives me comfort. Don't ask me why.
Antimony, arsenic, aluminum, selenium, and hydrogen, and oxygen, and nitrogen, and rhenium, and nickel, neodymium, neptunium, germanium, and iron, americium, ruthenium, uranium, europium, zirconium, lutetium, vanadium, and lanthanum, and osmium, and astatine, and radium, and gold, protactinium.
And these follow-up articles in the Scientific American March 2011 edition: Science and Music in David Biello's Darwin Was a Punk. Greg Graffin is quoted as saying that there are no good songs about science, but he ignores the work of Monty Python in their seminal Galaxy Song, which will close today's program, by the way. It may not appeal to Graffin's punk preferences, but not only is the song's science apparently plausible, it's also tuneful and the best song I know that begins and ends with the performer in a refrigerator, Nigel Taylor from New York City. The editors reply: numerous readers reacted to Graffin's assertion by sending us great examples of science songs. In addition to Monty Python's immortal song, others include Mammals by the band They Might Be Giants, whose song Science is Real was played earlier in today's program, John Maswell's album Science is the Poetry of Reality, and many songs by Tom Lehrer, which is playing in the background right now, The Elements. Presumably, none of the songs satisfies Graffin's taste to qualify as good. This next article comes to us from the Health and Science section of the Week magazine, published on the 29th of April, 2011, entitled The Lure of Music for Depressed Teenagers. Teenagers who spend a lot of time listening to music are more likely to be depressed, a new study has found, while those who read are considerably less so. Researchers at the University of Pittsburgh closely monitored the activity of 106 teenagers, half of whom had been diagnosed with clinical depression over the course of 8 weeks. Surprisingly, they found that the amount of time the subject spent on TV, movies, video games, and Facebook had no correlation with their mental health. But music did. Those who listened for 5 or more hours per day were 8 times more likely to be depressed than those who didn't listen often. And though only a tiny fraction of the volunteers spent much time reading, avid readers were 90% less likely to be depressed than those who rarely cracked a book or magazine. The study doesn't prove that music causes depression, lead author Brian Primick tells NPR.org, but it does suggest that listening to music appeals to teens who don't have a lot of energy, which is a warning sign of depression. To read, on the other hand, you really have to engage a lot of your brain, something that's harder for depressed teens to muster the energy to do. This next article comes to us from Parade magazine, published on 28 November 2010. Neil Diamond, the hitmaker on why he tweets, is not an idle kind of guy and shops at Costco for his mom. Only a true musical icon can be parodied on Saturday Night Live by Will Ferrell and have an episode of American Idol devoted to his songs. Now, Neil Diamond, recently nominated for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, has a new disc, Dreams, on which he covers modern standards from the 60s and 70s like Yesterday and Desperado. Those songs left an indelible impression on me, he says. I always wished I'd written them. Despite the accolades and decades of musical success, the 69-year-old Diamond remains a proudly solitary man.
I've been so many places in my life and time.
Some of your most inspiring songs, Sweet Caroline in 1969, America in 1980, were written during turbulent times in U.S. history. Are you tempted to write another now? I've actually thought of that. We're so inundated with bad news, and I would like to write a song that's an optimistic, uplifting view of what America can and will be. That would be a challenge. I don't even know if I could do it. Given your appearance on American Idol, did you consider going for Simon Cowell's job? No, I'm not a weekly television kind of guy. I'd much rather devote my time to writing or performing. I wish them luck, but it's not for me. What's your Sunday at home ritual these days? My mom, Rose, 92, joins me when I'm in Malibu. We eat lunch and have nice talks. I feel like I'm making up for lost time. I've been so busy for so much of my life. We have a lot of home movies my dad took, and we like to watch those and talk about the relatives. What's on the menu? I always have her favorite meal waiting for her. Costco hot dogs and potato salad. Those hot dogs are good. On your new album, you tackled Gilbert O'Sullivan's Alone Again, naturally. Did that song speak to you now that you're single again? No. I've always had a sense of being alone, but it struck me as a brilliant song. Gilbert was only 23 or so when he wrote it. It's an amazing insight from someone so young. What one personal item do you take on the road? I had a baseball in my bag on a number of tours. It was kind of a security blanket. I could always dig in for that ball and feel the weight of it, how good it felt in my hands. At this point in your career, what would people be surprised to know about you? I don't mind at all waiting in line at Starbucks. I like to be in contact with people.
I love you in a place where there's no space or time.
So how'd you do on those trivia questions today? The most played rock and roll song is, in fact, You've Lost That Loving Feeling by the Righteous Brothers. That song has been played over 8 million times. And the recording artist whose real name is Herbert Buckingham Cowrie is Tiny Tim, Tiptoe Through the Tulips.
Whenever life gets you down, Mrs. Brown, and things seem hard or tough, and people are stupid, obnoxious or daft, and you feel that you had quite enough. Just remember that you're standing on a planet that's evolving and revolving.
Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Rock Review. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience, and this program is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. So long, until next time.